Good afternoon. I'm still in Eastern Europe, in Moldova. We continue our series, Summer on the Mount P, or you could call it Money Part 2, Mammon and Worry. Last time we looked at treasure and eyeballs. I having to do with our focus, what is it that we're really looking at? What is it that we desire in life? Where's our center? And treasure should be in heaven, not on earth. Jesus says, no man can serve two masters. Matthew 6:24. He'll either hate the one and love the other, or else he'll hold fast to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon is an Aramaic word. Aramaic is the language that Jesus would have spoken. It's related to Hebrew. And it's the word for riches. It's personified as a god or as a power, mammon. Love and hate. If you're trying to understand, by the way, this idea that you love or you hate, they're opposites, but not in the way we might think. When Jesus says, for example, in Luke 14, you have to hate your mother and father, he's not talking about despising them. He's using it in this sense, that you love one thing, you hate another. You can't love two, you have to choose. One thing is what you're for, the other thing is what you're against. Okay, so it's very binary. And that does help us to understand his meaning. For more on that, look at Luke 14, 25, Luke 16, 13. So mammon is not just a master, it's a god. For you know this, no fornicator, no covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Ephesians 5:5. So a covetous man is an idolater, and that man or woman is serving another god. There's a satirist named Juvenal in the ancient world, and I like his sarcastic comment. No deity is held in such reverence among us as wealth. The god of money, wealth, that's the one we really revere. Yeah, so it's not really surprising that Jesus would speak about mammon as though it's a god. And this verse, what we just looked at, begins Jesus' third angle of approach to the important topic of wealth. Let's continue. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life. What you will eat, what you will drink, what you wear, nor about your body, what you will put on. This is the clothes. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his lifespan? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field. How they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not dressed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive, tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? This is milk chocolate. Or what shall we drink? Good stuff. Water, my favorite beverage. Or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Matthew 6:25 to 32. This passage begins, therefore. So we just read, you cannot serve God in money. And then, therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life. And it's this passage on worry. If we're not careful, if we don't pay attention to the transition, we could almost miss the context. The context is our attitude towards wealth, towards possessions, towards money. Does it own us or do we own it? Does it control us or do we control it? So therefore connects the passage to what Jesus just said. He understands our need for reassurance that God will take care of us, even when we refuse to worship mammon. And notice, food, drink, clothing, these are all necessities. You got to have those. And that's a point that will prove tomorrow, it'll prove important when tomorrow we go through the final message from the last two verses of Matthew 6. So Jesus uses, again, examples. Three examples to get his point across about not worrying. Birds, your lifespan, and flowers. So he's always got an illustration, an analogy. And note here, he doesn't actually say anxiety is a sin. I know he says don't worry, and I've heard some preachers say if he says don't do it, then to do it is a sin. There can be sin. I think of it more as a condition. Anxiety more is a failure to trust the Lord, and it indicates a lack of faith. Verse 30. We are not to worry as the pagans do. Now, how do they worry? They complain about expenses, even while they're often living beyond their means. Say, I don't have money for this cause or that cause. I don't have any money for the poor or the church. I can't help out because I have credit cards and they're all maxed out. Okay, I have loans and I've got to pay them. Well, loans for what? Oh, to be able to have this really nice car. I do it for the family. You know, most kids don't really care what kind of car you have. We need to have a giant house. I know it's three times the surface area of the house my parents grew up in, but, you know, you got to look the part. So I need a giant house, even if I don't have furniture to put in it. Really? Why don't you just rent some office space if you just want space? The truth is, you're trying to impress people. You bought into the lie that bigger is better. And so we complain, but it's self-inflicted. Like much of my pain in my life, it's stuff I did to myself. I can blame someone else, and I'll try if they're nearby, or if they're far away and they can't defend themselves. No, we need to take responsibility. Pagans, again, those who do not trust God, those who follow mammon, they argue about money. So it's not just that they complain about it, they argue, especially in relationships. You probably know that money is a huge flashpoint in marriages and often divorce in marriages connected with financial things. Not just fighting who gets what when we divide assets, but instead of trusting God, we are trusting prestige or position or power, the things that come with wealth. And so already they've been living in idolatry. And so not surprising, this can destroy marriage. Idolatry is dangerous. Don't tell me, well, worshiping other gods, that's just a different preference. It depends on your culture. It's all okay. It's not okay. Because idolatry dehumanizes us. Idolatry diverts us from God's purposes for our lives. We're not to worry as the pagans do. They're stingy. They give less to the needy. Multiple studies have been conducted that show that people of faith do far more to help the needy, not just in time of disaster, but regularly, month by month, week by week. They do far more than atheists do. And I'm not saying there aren't some great atheists. I mean, some atheists who really help the needy and love others. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the studies indicate that that's quite rare among non-believers and quite common among believers. Because ultimately, if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in heaven, you don't believe in treasure in heaven, and maybe more significant than the reward or punishment, you don't see your fellow human being as God's daughter, God's son. You don't see them as being or bearing the image of God. And that's why atheist regimes tend to have such a poor record on human rights. People just aren't that important, not the individual, just in the aggregate. Don't worry as the pagans do, complaining, arguing, and being greedy, being stingy, not willing to share. Pagans take one another to court for financial reasons. They demand their rights, and they have lawsuits to make sure they get what's theirs. I think the attitude of Jesus, Paul, the early church is, it's not worth a fight. In fact, it's quite mistaken. You're going to give a wrong idea to the watching world. Just let it go. Pagans not only worry about food and drink and clothing, which I admit these are necessities, they also fret. They worry about luxury items, and they worry about impressing others. I think you probably know Ecclesiastes is very sharp, very insightful, critiquing the world. And that verse in chapter 4, verse 4, all envy and striving and, what is it? Trying to keep up with the neighbors, keeping up with the Joneses. It's materialistic. This is not right. It comes from greed. And that actually explains a lot of commerce. Advertisers trying to get you to buy something you really don't need. With money you don't actually have, and it'll be difficult to repay. To impress people that you don't really care that much about anyway, if you think about it. Ecclesiastes 4:4. Jesus calls you and me to be different. So do we trust him? Do we trust our Heavenly Father? cannot serve God and mammon. Got to choose. Don't worry about these things. So the context is not just worry, it's worry about necessities. Now, Jesus never promises you'll get your luxury items, but I'll take care of you. Generally speaking, you'll have something to wear, something to drink, something to eat. Jesus calls us to be different. The third and final part of our extended look at Matthew 6 will be Sermon on the Mount Q. And I hope you're looking forward to that. But that's all for today. Bye-bye.